Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to the July 1st edition of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm in studio here with Cody Beeson, Adam Hanson, and Thomas Sparks. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
We want to start our show off today with a little salute to the 4th of July that's going to occur in the next couple of days, and the birth of our nation. So we're going to start that off with a wonderful rendition of the Pledge of Allegiance by Red Skelton.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to, this is true. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher. Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell. He says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders. Not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer? And that would be eliminated from schools, too.
I don't know how many classrooms still recite the Pledge of Allegiance at the beginning of their day in school. What would you guess?
I assume it's part of
standard, you know, procedures.
Protocol?
Yeah, I mean,
For grade school, for high school?
Yeah, I mean, it always was when I was there, but I'm really dating myself now. So, I mean, back when I went to school, there was only two genders. So.
Oh, yeah.
Things change. You are old. Things change.
Adam, what do you think? What percentage of public schools?
I don't think they say it in high school. I'm trying to remember what my kids have said. I think we've had conversations about this. I think my middle schoolers say it. And I think my elementary school age kids say it, but they go to a charter school. So the charter school is a little bit more, I would say, patriotic or military based or friendly than your typical public education. And I know they do things every morning. They've got their little routine. And I think the pledge is part of that. And I think they say it
for the charter school.
For the charter school. And then my two daughters that are in middle school out here in the foothills, I think they say it. I think I've heard them say, I think we've had conversations because they say, well, some people don't say it, or they don't get up, or they don't put their hand over their heart or something like that. But high school, I'm pretty sure they don't. If I remember correctly.
I'm positive they don't at Gila Ridge. I've never heard of it being said. And I think that if it were, that we'd be hearing some public outcry right now, which is kind of disconcerting. But Thomas, what's your take? Where do your kids attend school, and how many say the Pledge of Allegiance?
They attend a private school, and they do say it at their school, which I'm happy about. I think.
Have you watched them? Have you been in attendance when they did it?
Yeah, I have.
How do you feel when they do that?
I like it. I think it's important to have a sense of national pride, and the division of the country is never a good thing. So if we can get a younger generation to have a revitalized sense of pride, I think it's going to put us on a trajectory for a more healthy country.
I recently finished the book 1776. Great overall history of the Revolution. And it just reinvigorated to me. It attempts to leave out a lot of references to God and divine intervention during the Revolution, but it just can't. When it's talking about Valley Forge, when it's talking about all of the things that occurred that were just mounted against the Continental Army, and the trials and tribulations that they surpassed in order to obtain independence is just, it's incredible. It's an incredible story, and it's something you need to, I think, revisit at least annually. And this is a great opportunity when we're celebrating the birth of our nation to kind of think about that. I know, Thomas, you know the author of that book. So our listeners, if they're interested, they could listen or read it. Who's the author of the 1776?
That's David McCullough.
David McCullough. And he's one of the foremost historians of the American Revolution. He is fantastic. So anyway, that and The Notorious Benedict Arnold is one of my favorite books out there.
You've told me about that one. I haven't read that one.
You need to. So since we're talking about the birth of the United States and the history of the United States, one important fact that I would like to put out there is that three American presidents died on the 4th of July. And I think that's just incredible. Two of them... 50 years to the day after 1776. And so that was Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. They died on July 4th, 1826. They had originally been, they'd not always been politically on the same page, even initially during the drafting of the Declaration of Independence. And the Constitution was... You would say that John Adams, he was the voice of the Constitution, and James Monroe was maybe the writer of the Constitution. But Thomas Jefferson was over there in France being the ambassador for the United States to France during the time the Constitution was written. And so when he came back, the country had moved forward quite a bit. The Constitution, a lot of people don't understand this, but it wasn't adopted instantaneously when the country was born on July 4th, 1776. It was 1789 that the Constitution was actually adopted and ratified. And so Thomas Jefferson came back, and the country's governance had changed quite a bit since he was gone in France. And he was, as you would need to be in that time period and to do the events that he did, a very proud and ambitious person, and so I think he might have felt a little bit left out because he wasn't part of the drafting of that document. And he did see some what he felt were flaws in the document, but nonetheless, he gave support to it and ultimately served as a president and swore to uphold and protect it. But him and John Adams fell out of favor. They were actually bitter enemies, as they both were seeking for the presidency, John Adams first, and then later on Thomas Jefferson as the third president of the United States. But on their later in their later years, they reconciled, and each of them on their deathbed had the other's name referenced in their very last sentences. And honored them and their contribution to their country, and also honored the fact that it was the 4th of July and the birth of our nation. So I thought that was significant.
Sean and I went back to Boston, what was it, like a month and a half ago?
Yeah.
2 months ago. And when we did that, we did a little tour. And I was really looking or seeking to understand more of why the Puritans came originally, you know, because we went to Boston, so that's kind of where it all happened, the ignition, I guess, of the whole fight.
Yeah, they call it the cradle, yeah. Right, of the Revolution.
And I'm curious to, we never really talked about it. We did cursory, Sean, but I was interested to know what was your take on all that when we went through that tour. Did you learn anything? Did anything stick out to you as far as the birth of our nation and the Puritans coming into the Massachusetts Bay area and then into Boston?
Yeah, you know, one thing that stood out to me quite a bit, first of all, Boston was very clean. And I've been to some other big cities, and they aren't as clean, Philadelphia being one of them. Philadelphia was disappointing in how many homeless people and how much was just on the streets. Now, not at the national monuments, you know, Benjamin Franklin's grave and the Liberty Bell and those types of things.
The Rocky statue.
Independence Hall, Rocky statue, yeah. But for the most part, like the inner city, it was pretty dirty, but not Boston. Boston was clean. Boston was very, very clean. Even for on a small city standard, it was clean, but it's a big city. And just the way all the monuments are lined up and what do they call it, Independence Trail?
The Freedom Trail is
Freedom
what they call
Trail it. That, yeah. That you walk along. It was inspiring to learn about how many brilliant minds were culminated there in one spot. I think the thing that turned out or that really stood out to me the most was the fact that the King of England was trying to reconcile with the Americans, you know, with the people in America and allowing them some sense of self-governance where they got to call the shots essentially for what was happening over here in America, but not with the taxation, right? And so a lot of the taxes and restrictions that were put on the Americans had been repealed recently, but there was one sticking point, and everybody knows about this, and that was the tax on the tea. And it was a pretty minor tax, but the Americans at that point, even though they had a higher standard of living, and a lot of people don't understand this, they had a higher standard of living than those living in Europe and specifically England, they did not want to stand for that because they felt that it was their divine destiny to become independent. And they wanted to not only demonstrate for themselves, but they referenced million or many times the millions of unborn to come, that they have freedom and these rights are bestowed by God and not the king. And this was a sticking point for them. And so they took that tea, right? They threw it into the harbor, and they could have continued to live very comfortable, affluent lives, but they decided not to. And they knew that their lives probably for the most part was going to become more difficult and maybe end in, as this act of defiance. But they did it for the millions of unborn, meaning us. And I think we owe a great debt of gratitude, and 4th of July is a great opportunity to demonstrate that.
We got to go to break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. We've got Sean Garner. We've got Tom Sparks. And we've got Cody Beeson in the studio today. And we want to wish you a happy 4th of July. Keep your fingers, you know, when you go out and shoot those fireworks. Sean, I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
I think this is notorious for losing fingers. It's like one of the highest hospital visit days, I think, of the year, the 4th of July. So just keep your digits if you can. If not, you know, it was a good run, and it was worth it, right? We were talking earlier about how Sean and I visited Boston. We had to go to a legal conference back in Boston a couple months ago, and we took the opportunity, we took like a day prior to the conference getting started to visit some sites there in Boston, one of which was the Boston Tea Party boat. It's a recreation. I don't think it's the actual boat, but you go on this boat, and you act like you're one of the colonists back in the day, and we started out kind of like these actors were all getting us all riled up, saying the British have passed this Stamp Act, and then they passed the Tea Act, which forced us to use only British tea. We couldn't sell any other tea, homemade tea or anything like that. And in addition to that, not only did we have to buy British tea, it was super nasty and gross because it takes forever to get across the ocean. So by the time it got here, most of it was moldy and gross, and then they had to pay taxes on that, and they didn't even want to drink it. So there's all sorts of underground things going on, obviously. When a people is oppressed, obviously, you start looking for other ways. So there's a black market of tea making and trade, and the housewives actually had a lot to do with that. They had their own underground society that was dealing with tea. And so anyway, we go to this little recreation of it, and we're recruited as these colonists to dress up and then throw tea into the bay there in Boston to show our rebellion in the dead of night. And right, I think we got done doing this little act or this little skit in that Boston Tea Party Museum on the ship. And Sean, you turned to me and you said, I wonder, how do you think we would have actually been? You know, if we lived back then.
Yeah, whose side would we have been on?
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting question. And then we went through this whole thing, you know.
And the thing was, because it was actually a minority of the Americans that were for the revolution. They say maybe as many as a third, but two-thirds were not. One-third was maybe indifferent, and one-third was loyal to the king, and they wanted to remain subjects of the king. And so you think of it as this great revolution, everybody's uniting together to throw off the repressive government of England. That was not the case. This was a minority movement.
That reminds me, so in this same museum, we went to that it was pretty cool. It was like a 3D portrayal. Remember, we go into that room, and it was like a theater, and then they had like a colonist woman have an interaction with a loyalist lady, and they were just going back and forth, and it demonstrated the points of view back then. And like you said, the majority of the people were loyalists to the crown. Why do you think that is? I mean, was it because they didn't want to make waves, they didn't want heat to come down on them? You think that's what it was, Sean?
Absolutely. I think that people, when they have a general quality of life and a sense of security, they will continue in that path. And that is human nature. We want safety. We want security. And we will be willing to give up a lot in return for those things. And that's why I want to pay so much homage to our founding fathers, because they had both those things, safety and security. I mean, the British military was the strongest in the world, and they were being protected by the British military. They had just fought the French and Indian War, where the British supplied them the arms and the strategies to win that war. And so they were being protected by the strongest army in the world, and they were largely independent being across the sea, number one, and they were given quite a few rights. They were one of the most free people in the world, even under the British government. So it took a lot of, I would say, inspired thinking of the divine nature of mankind in order for them to do what they did.
Yeah, and you said that they were living kind of, had they played by the rules, they still probably would have enjoyed a nice life, you know, had they played by the Crown's rules. But it became so oppressive, specifically in Boston, because of their outward acts of rebellion. And so the Crown responded. Any of you that have watched or read about this event, it was just time after time over the course of maybe three decades where the Crown just started. They did the Stamp Act, and then they did the Tea Act. So they were targeting legislation towards these colonists in Boston to try and quell the rebellion that was happening. And every act that they did made them even more defiant and caused this rebellion within, specifically with Sam Adams and his crew, the Sons of Liberty. They started their own underground. I just think it's the coolest thing, you know, this underground stick it to the man kind of thing. It's totally American. And that's what I love about it. It's like, yeah, mm-hmm. I feel that. Like when I have authority coming at me, my first act is probably rebellion. Yeah. That's, Tom, why I didn't go in the military, because I knew I would not be able to deal with authority in a healthy way, right? And not to say that people that go into the military are sheep or anything like that. They just are better men than I am, or better women than I am, because they can deal with that. They know how to give honor, I guess, to an authority. I just have always had problems with that in my life. And so my first, this is just me speaking, but my first kind of thought is to rebel. And this goes back to COVID. So we're talking about the British Crown, right? And when we were back in Boston going through all this, I couldn't help but think of today and the taxation that we experience today and the oppressive nature of our government today. And I was thinking, man, it might even be worse than the Crown was back then.
Oh, because yeah.
The taxes are so heavy and there's nothing I can do about it.
I think it is much worse. The Boston Tea Party was a 2% tax. 2%, they're throwing tea into the harbor. And now we've got people paying, you know, 30, 40, 50% of their income.
40, yeah, if you're over a certain amount of income, you're going to pay 40 to 50%. That's upcoming as the Trump tax plan expires next year. So this is not, there's a reason why everybody's leaving the United States to do business, is because this is not business friendly. I was watching a clip on YouTube the other day of Mr. Wonderful. What's his name? Do you remember his actual name?
Kevin O'Leary?
Yeah, yeah. Kevin O'Leary.
He's great, actually.
I was very impressed.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a political thing I was watching, but he does a really good job of not being political. He's just straight to the point business-wise. This is not good for business because of this, this, and this. And obviously, he runs in these circles with both Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. And they're all just doing, you know, these guys and these women are, they're big old people in business and stuff. And so it's not that they're dumb or unsophisticated when it comes to politics.
As opposed to Mark Cuban. He is dumb when it comes to politics.
Why do you say that?
Because he's so loyal to he's got Trump derangement syndrome.
Oh, he does, yeah.
And he cannot reconcile that anything that Trump does could possibly be good. And so he's going to support Biden and the Democrats no matter what. Now, the Democrat Party, as it existed 20 years ago, I have 95% in common with them. The woke extreme left that exists today, I don't have hardly anything in common with them, because everything has to be some fringe issue. And so Mark Cuban, he's with them no matter what because of that Trump derangement syndrome. I'm not a fan of Donald Trump as a person, and that might get me canceled for the audience that I'm talking to on this show. But I am a fan of his policy and the direction that he takes America. And so I'm not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater, per se. I'm going to take the good that comes from that movement and go with it. And I'm going to look at the other side for what it really is. And I don't think Mark Cuban can, where Kevin O'Leary, he does. And he shoots straight every time, whether it's for or against the policies that are proposed.
But going back to that COVID issue or these, I think that really manifested the power grab of our government and how willing people were to give up freedom in the name of so-called security. We trusted the government because it said, we've got this killer disease out there. If you catch it, you're going to die. And so there's this fear factor that really caused a shudder throughout the United States and the world. And that was what was portrayed to us. And so as a consequence of that, they say, don't leave your house. You can't do this. You can't do that. And these are basic human freedoms of me to move about. And in fact, they're constitutionally protected, God-given freedoms of the freedom of movement and doing business and contracting and living my life. But the government all of a sudden said, no, this is more important that you stay home and we know better than you. And I don't know about you, but it was pretty evident to me early on that that was a big no-no. When the government starts telling me that they know better than I do and that I can't leave my house, I'm going to be skeptical of that. And my hope is that we never forget. We never forget as a populace in the United States what happened to us and how quick the government turned on us, I would say. And if you think about it, it's like we talk about the government in, let's say, air quotes, right? The government. And we act like it's this all-knowing, all-seeing, God-like being. In reality, it's just a group of people that we put into power, and they all have their biases, they all have their strengths, they have their weaknesses. It's just people. And these people are flawed, and they are power hungry. I'm convinced that they're power hungry. And so that's going to motivate them to do certain things, to hold on to certain power, and even money, if you follow the money. And as a consequence to that, our best interests are not always their best interests. Does that make sense? Cody, you believe that?
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, didn't we see that with the policies that rolled out that, you know, we couldn't trust, you know, what is it? Do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
Yeah.
How many times did we see elected officials?
Gavin Newsom.
Yep. Doing exactly that.
Nancy no mask Pelosi. In the restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah. And even the Republicans, but, you know, they didn't, for a large part, were opposed to it. You know, we had Ted Cruz that he was going on vacations too. But I think what we got to take away from that is we're free. That means we get to choose bad or good.
Right.
We get to
suffer the consequences.
Reap the consequences of our own choices. Being free doesn't mean we get to do whatever we want and then the government catches us if we fall. It means the government allows us to fall. And the government also allows us to succeed and own our intellectual property and our real estate property, our personal property, and do with it what we may. Now, that may result in the big argument was bad things happening to other people around us. But that is also part of living in a free society, that there are people that are going to act poorly with that freedom, and we're going to have to suffer the consequences of their actions. That's why we're given all the rights that we have, and primarily among those is the Second Amendment, to defend ourselves and defend our rights, not only against people around us, but against the government, infringement upon our constitutional rights, which are actually just an enshrinement of our God-given rights.
I agree with that. I thought it was really interesting with the Hunter Biden case that recently just took place. He was convicted on all counts, and this was a gun charge, and I thought it was really interesting that we didn't hear anything from the left about how bad guns were in this particular case. It was all about how Hunter Biden, this was just a political thing. They didn't talk anything about how he was an addicted meth and cocaine addict.
Or gun-toting crazy, you know, that...
Trying to skirt the gun laws.
Yeah.
They always say, well, we need more gun laws, we need more background checks, but yet he just skirted those and no crickets. Crickets on that side. It's like, well, that's what you've always wanted. You've got this system in place where these people can't get guns, or you want it in place, and yet you didn't say anything about it. Like, you're just going to his defense. So are you for guns or not for guns? I was really confused when that all came about. We got to go to break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson, and I've got my compadres with me. I've got Sean Garner, Tom Sparks, and we've got Cody Beeson in the studio today, and we've been talking a lot about our nation's history because in a couple days we've got the 4th of July, which is one of my favorite holidays. In fact, in our office, we take it so seriously that we close the office every year that week of 4th of July. We want our staff to know that we really honor our founders. We honored this tradition of America, and we want them to go spend time with their family. And so we close for the week of 4th of July every year. Historically, we've been doing that. And Tom, I wanted to know, what is one of the things that points out, that sticks out to you in American history?
Yeah, well, I think going off of what we've said in the past segments today is just the, I would say, the reverence we should have for the founding fathers. They were, you know, brilliant men, brilliant people that laid the foundation, the groundwork for the great nation we have today. When we look at their character and we look at, you know, I think how that character's been tarnished in, you know, the last couple of decades, where people will focus on the fact that they're slave owners, they're terrible, mm-hmm. these terrible racist white men. They were brilliant men that laid a great foundation for what we have in our livelihoods today. Now, when I think of one of the best characteristics that I would like to emulate from them, and I think everybody should emulate, was their vision. Because as we've discussed previously, they had it all. They had great lives. They were wealthy by comparison to the rest of the world, and they chose to sacrifice it. I don't think they threw it away, but it was a calculated sacrifice in order to achieve a vision that they had for a greater union that they wanted to see. And I think that's a great lesson that we can all take in our lives, is so often do we see opportunities in our lives where we have a status quo, we have a comfortability that we enjoy in our lives, but there's something else out there that we could get and we could gain for ourselves if we would just seize the vision, carpe diem, so to speak, and try to elevate ourselves. And I think that would be a great lesson that if I could put one lesson into Congress, it would be that, is search for a higher vision, always pursue that higher vision, and at least get these ideas going, because too often do we see in the House and the Senate where ideas are being shut down and only one side's allowed to speak. The media narrative only covers one side of the conversation, and that stifles, I think, the movement forward.
Prior to going to Boston, Sean, you and I were kind of, I know we talked about this prior to going to Boston, our Boston trip. We were looking for ways to kind of get in, engrossed in the revolution, looking at different books and things like that to study. Well, as in my pursuit of that, and I started with the Puritans. I wanted to understand that mindset and what caused this people to travel across the ocean and settle in the Boston area, and what was the mindset. Particularly, I wanted to think, I was trying to figure out what motivated a man or a woman to sacrifice their comfortability, like you said, Tom, or their, actually, to the end of their life. They were going to sacrifice their life.
That's the word for the day, comfortability.
Yeah, it's not a real word, but it sounds good.
Yeah, I like it.
You got a problem with that?
No, I'm just saying, I'm acknowledging it.
Thank you. Anyway, with these people that put their lives on the line for what? You know, for this idea of freedom or independence, what would motivate a person to do that? Would I do that? Really is what it came down to. I was trying to figure out what motivated these people to put down their lives, to give up their comfortability, in the words of Sean, his favorite word.
It is a word, by the way.
Oh, it is a word.
Yeah.
What's the meaning? Yeah. Here we go. Let's see.
It's a noun.
Fact check.
Synonym of comfort.
All right. There you go. Fine.
Awesome. Take that.
There's a threshold, I think. You know, they hit a certain threshold. And they're willing to, what, it took, what, 3 months back then? Or was it 6 months across the Atlantic?
Yeah, I think it's three.
Okay, so I mean, it took them...
But 6 months, you know, to get a response back, right? Oh, okay. So 3 months there, 3 months back. So if to get a response back from a correspondence, it was 6 months.
So that being said, though, I mean, it took them that threshold of, you know, being persecuted. Like, that ultimately was...
So what is our level of persecution, I guess, is my
that we'll endure before you stand up.
And would I stand up? Are you mm-hmm. a loyalist, or are you a colonist, an American? You know, what is the point? And I'm not just saying, like, you know, rebelling against our government or something like that. I'm just saying, what principles do you have, if any? And that maybe that's what the answer to this question is. Without any principle or principles that you actually have ingrained into your heart or into your soul, let's say, then why would you fight? I wouldn't. You know, I would have no motivation to risk my life. I would be kind of like a Benedict Arnold, let's say, you know, where an opportunity presents itself, I'm going to take that opportunity because it's going to make my life better and more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you sacrifice these so-called values or these principles. Maybe, obviously, I didn't really have those principles ingrained in myself because I was willing to switch sides willy-nilly. And I think he tried to come back. He would bounce back and forth, whoever was going to take him in, you know. You know more than I do, Sean,
well, about Benedict Arnold. He didn't try to come back to then what was established as the United States. But he actually did come back during the War of 1812 and serve as a general there. And I know that he was successful in some of his campaigns here. I can't remember the specific battle, but he won a important battle in the War of 1812 as a general there. But he was never accepted really among the English individuals just back in England. He was never really accepted. The king didn't want to talk to him, didn't want to see him. He thought he'd be honored as a hero. And also among the military forces, they used him for what they could, right? Because he had a good understanding of the layout of the land and how the forces worked here. But in the end, he died in disgrace and penniless.
I wanted to ask you, so going back to this principal concept, I'm going to ask you gentlemen a question. I want you to think of one American principle or characteristic that these men and women portrayed in the Revolution that kept that fire blazing such that the king relented and gave us our independence. I mean, they fought like dogs till the end, and even till the point of independence, that last battle. What do you think? Okay, let's start with Tom. I'm going to ask you, what is a principle that I can put into my life that you can see in these founding fathers and in the men and women of the Revolution that are synonymous with the Revolution, or let's say American principles that we can put into our life come this July 4th. What do you think, Tom? Is there one that you can point to?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the one that I said earlier. I'm going to go visionary.
Okay.
Because I think that that's the catalyst for all the good things that are going to happen in your life, is have a vision for where you want to be, and it'll start there, and then you can put processes in place to make sure that your life continues on an upward trajectory.
So you're going to create it in your mind first and then work towards that goal kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see that mind picture of what you want to, where you want to be. These people obviously saw freedom and God-given rights being protected, this new nation of America, and they pursued that. Sean, what do you think? What's a principle of America?
I think it is important to embrace that even if your view is a minority view, it's worth pursuing and it's worth voicing, because a lot of us feel like our rights are being taken away or being silenced by individuals from either the woke left or just from society in general, that we can't speak truth to in light and in society. But our founding fathers were in the minority. They were faced with a lot of loyalists or people that were impartial that didn't want to rock the boat, but they would speak out and they were shunned for it, even among their own colleagues. And we need to be brave enough to embrace that, to say it's an important issue. I don't want to be contemptible, and I don't want to be contradictory to individuals. I don't want to be respectful, but I still want to take a stand and not cower to whatever the popular movement is when I know what is right.
I love it. Cody?
You know, prosperity, I think when they put that line in the Declaration of Independence, you know, the pursuit of happiness, like just the ability to pursue it, that speaks so much, because I think being over here away from, you know, the crown, they really got an idea that we were able to set this up on our own, and we really didn't need the crown too much. Well, we did in the beginning, but after, you know, 100 years in, what did the crown provide that they couldn't provide, you know, that God didn't provide them on their own?
I love that you use that word, or you reference God. And I think if I were going to pick a principle, it would be the Revolution, and to me, was founded on godly principles. These individuals understood that God gives us our rights, not government. And that was ingrained in the Constitution that they ultimately pinned. It was also ingrained in the Declaration of Independence in the very beginning, the Bill of Rights. God is the procurer and the genesis of all human rights, and not the government.
You know, that's a wild concept back then. Right now, I mean, I think we just take it for granted. We've been told that since we've been born. But back then, that really wasn't the case, you know?
And I think it's flipping the script in a certain way. And I agree with you. I think we've got to the point where it's like, I rely on my government so much that if they say I can't do something, oh, okay. Yeah, you know, they say what I can do and what I can't do. And I forget the idea that, wait a second, God tells me what I can do and what I can't do. I'm a free person, and I can choose what to do, regardless of a government.
And we were saying that, like, when the pandemic was first happening, like, oh, they canceled the flights. So it's okay. It's probably best for us. You know, we were saying, like, okay, well,
they're flatten the curve.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we were looking out for that stuff. But now it's like, well, we're kind of more awake.
Yeah, hopefully. That's my hope. My concern is that we forgot, and then we were very quick to forget. I mean, 9/11 happened, right? And we were all in. I felt like, as Americans, all of a sudden you saw more flags flying. You saw we all were in. We were going to go get these bad guys. But about 3, 4, 5 years later into the Iraq war, where we start questioning, well, why are we doing this? Is this really going to accomplish what we want? And we forget the tragedy of 9/11. And the further we get away from that event, I feel like the more we forget. I felt like there was kind of like a turning to God in that moment. I don't know about you guys, but I felt that way. And I felt like the nation kind of started maybe praying more, turning to God more. And I felt like over the course of a few years, America just kind of started to forget. And we became a little bit more, I don't know, prideful, I guess, in our own selves and what we can do for ourselves. And it takes another event, you know? So I think as long as we this is my personal opinion, and we continue to look to God like the founders did to guide our nation, I believe that we will be protected. We will be able to continue as a nation of prosperity and a beacon of independence and light to the rest of the world. If we don't, I feel like we have the capability of just collapsing like Rome or other great societies of the past. Tom, it looks like you're chomping at the bit to say something.
No, not at all, but I will. Well, I think you're correct that it's a historical cycle that people forget when things are comfortable. And when you have an event, like a catastrophic event, or an event that would be a catalyst for humility, then people are teachable. And I think our country went through that in 9/11. We go through that during wartime very often, where you have a new sense of pride. And COVID, in a sense, could have been the same thing, where we came out of that thinking, well, we don't want to do that again. We want to make sure that we are on alert to make sure our freedoms aren't trampled upon so easily. And it just, the future holds, I don't know, mysterious things as we continue to try to preserve our rights. We'll see how it goes.
Well, we got the happy 4th of July. Keep your digits, and we'll talk to you next week. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.